So we will go ahead and get started right on time. I want to welcome everyone to Advancing Advocacy with the National Association of, I still cannot get this right, Brenda, can you say it for us?
National Association for Rational Sexual Offense Laws. Yes, I still have to work at it myself.
See, so I knew I was going to say it wrong. I appreciate those who are joining us. We would like to welcome Robin Vanderwall this evening. He's actually with North Carolina RSOL, and they are recently newly formed, I should say, I guess, advocacy organization, and have experienced some good growth just getting out of the gate, as well as some litigative kind of work. And I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to Robin to talk to us about his experience growing that organization. Robin, you can take it from here.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank everybody who's called in. I hope not to make it too terribly boring for you, but my plan is to speak for 20 to 30 minutes about a couple of things. Number one, I want to make sure that everybody has a little bit of an understanding of how we were able to go from zero to 60 in a fairly short amount of time. And I want to make sure people understand that that's not likely to be easily replicated without probably some additional investment of time and other things. But I've come up with a plan over the last couple of days. I've actually thought a lot about this, and I've formulated what I'm calling the 8 fundamentals to quick starting an affiliate. And you can call it the 8 Fs for short, if you wish. But before I get into that, let me just talk a little bit about what happened here in North Carolina. I've been here for quite a while. As a matter of fact, all the time that I've been involved with NARSOL, formerly RSOL, I've done so from my home base here in Raleigh. But I never really put a lot of time or emphasis on developing a state affiliate until, I'd say, probably fall of last year is when it finally struck me that we needed to do a little more. And that's largely a product of a couple of factors. Number one, at the time, there was a lot of, I knew about a case, most of us here that were paying attention, knew about a case that was challenging the premises restrictions that North Carolina had in place. And I became aware of that challenge actually because of an individual who had contacted the national office and wanted to find out if we could help him. He had been arrested out in the western part of the state for eating at McDonald's in the morning and wasn't supposed to be there because there was a play area within the facility. And anyway, long story short, in doing the research and finding out more about the law, I discovered this federal case that would ultimately be Doe v. Cooper, which challenged the premises statute in North Carolina and successfully rolled most of it back and was sustained back in the fall by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. And at along about the same time as I discovered this case, we found out that the legislature, there was rumbling in the legislature that they wanted to do something about sex offenders or registrants being able to go to the state fair. And that was as a result of the fact that for whatever reason, in the fall of 2015, there were 4 separate incidences of registered people being caught within the confines of the state fair. This had never been a problem in the past. All of a sudden, it was a problem, and there were some legislative leaders that said they want to do something to fix that problem. And that's when I began to believe we really needed to have more of a voice and we needed to have more of a focus on what was happening in the legislature, and we needed to try to organize a little bit better so that we could be prepared to fight either bad legislation or even challenge the outcome of the enactment of bad legislation. During the course of research and talking around with different individuals, I happened to find out who was handling the case, case that challenged the original premises statute, and I got in touch with those attorneys. I never was able actually to talk to Mr. Girding, but I did get a chance to talk to Mr. Dubling and talk to him on a couple of occasions about what he felt the strengths and weaknesses of that case were. And so I began to sort of build a relationship, not with the intent of ever doing anything with the relationship, but I thought it was important to find out as much as I could about what was happening in that case. And also was hoping at the time to find out if he'd be willing to handle the individual who'd come to us and was worried about his situation, having been arrested at McDonald's and all. So why does all of that matter? Well, it matters because the original impetus for getting an organization going was largely predicated by this concern over what the legislature might do vis-a-vis the state fair. So that became kind of a mantra. We've got to do something. We've got to organize. We've got to do something to stop this from happening, because if we don't do something, then it's just going to get worse. With all that said, I can, I think, at this point move into my structure and give you a little bit of a glimpse of why I think we were successful in getting organized pretty quickly, getting ourselves established, going through a few rounds of successful fundraising, and ultimately being able to get well enough along that we could launch our own legal challenge in January of this year, of 2017. So that's my document here. It's called The 8 Fundamentals to Quick Starting an Affiliate. And the first F is what I'm calling farming. I couldn't think of a better word, but the idea I'm trying to convey there is, you're looking for people who might be interested in helping. So I'm going to call that farming, because you're really farming individuals at that point. I was in a bit of an advantage. I had a bit of an advantage in, I had already talked at length at the national level about this idea that maybe the national organization could be more proactive in helping to get affiliates off the ground. And I want to caution here that that's not, at this point, that's not a universally embraced approach to affiliate development. And in many ways, North Carolina is still something of a guinea pig to see if this is actually, you know, workable. The good news, though, for national is the only thing so far that's really been necessary, and what was very important early on, was North Carolina, before it became North Carolina as an established affiliate, was able to get access to the names of the individuals who were already participating and involved with the national organization. So I was able to get that list, to, in a sense, borrow that list, and say to people who were strictly from North Carolina and who were already involved at the national level, would you be interested in being involved with, you know, with what we're wanting to do here? And one of the people who was already involved in North Carolina, in fact, the state contact, he and I, Mr. Bob, we got together a couple of times, and I asked him if he wouldn't mind if I put together the initial letter of solicitation or a letter of seeking interest, if he wouldn't mind sending that out to this list that I had managed to get my hands on. And he was happy to do that. So that's what we did. I think we may have done two or three rounds of solicitation, and just to find out, you know, who was interested.
And from that, from the response that I got, I was able to build a list of people who did express an interest and who might be available to do more than just, you know, keep up with what we're doing. And so after that, I'd say this was along around February or March of 16. At that point, it was time for the second part of my eight fundamentals, and that was formation. So we'd done the farming part, and now it was time to do the formation part. So what's meant by formation? Well, naturally, if you've got a list of folks who might be interested, you got to get them all together, and you got to talk about what it is we have in mind to do. And so that's what we did. We had an original organizational meeting, made everybody aware of the fact that we were going to have a conference, a teleconference, at such and such a time and on a such and such a day. And the folks that were interested in joining us were invited to attend. And I think we may have done that once or twice, actually, because at that point, of course, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, well, we've got to have some structure, and we've got to figure out who's going to play point in various areas of need if we're to establish ourselves and move forward. Now, I'll push pause right there, because I think one of the things that's very important, this is personal, this is what I believe, if you're going to be serious about affiliate development, the people who are involved in that process, I believe, need to embrace structure, and they need to have already decided that in order to be successful, and I believe, actually, Brenda, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe in order to actually be established as an affiliate, you're going to have to be incorporated. You have to do something at the state level to protect the entity and to make it official.
Well, Robin, I will, since you've been invited,
please.
No, we don't require that the an affiliate actually start out incorporated, but they do have to be formed and registered. Yeah. So.
Got you. Well, I believe that it's important, because I think one of the values of incorporating and going through the process of incorporating is it's two parts to it. First of all, going through the process forces you to really think about what are you doing and why are you doing it, because those are a couple of questions that have to come to mind if you're going to successfully form a corporation, and they're going to be very more important even when you seek a designation, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But so in the formation stage, you know, that was something I was already throwing out there, and I was always sharing that vision that if we're going to do something on the affiliate level, let's do it right, and let's make sure we incorporate. And I began to plant that seed fairly early on. Still, with that being said, there was at least a need to designate a leader who's going to play point, who's going to be the person that's kind of pushing the buttons to make everything happen the way it ought to happen. And that was a round robin discussion, and I was not keen on seizing control, so I didn't really have any interest in being the person that would do all that needed to be done. But as it turned out, I think the people who were involved before we'd actually formed anything had sort of come to the point where they felt like I probably would be in the best position to do the things necessary to dot the I's and cross the T's. So I was dubbed the leader. And from there, I felt like, you know, really the next big F to me at that point, after the formation point, after the formation period, the next big F was the focus. And this is where the cases that were already afoot, the Packingham case, the Doe v. Cooper case, the talk about making premises statute even more severe and prevent sex offenders from being at the state fair and other county fairs and this sort of thing, that became a focal point, because we needed something we could sort of rally around. And a lot of folks had heard about this. A lot of people had already seen the news. They'd already read the paper, and they knew that there was something going on. And a lot of people were not aware at that time that there was a case that was already challenging the premises statute. But as it turned out, it really didn't matter a whole lot, because the General Assembly was able to go in and do what it wanted to do with the premises statute, even after it was successfully challenged and set aside. But the focus is important, and it's not going to be the same from state to state. That's a key point. So if you're in a state that's wanting to be more affiliated, or if you're thinking of maybe helping to put something together, or if you're already together and you need to go kind of beyond where you're at, you need to think about what's going on in my state, what's going on in my area that needs focusing on, and what's something that other people can rally around. What is the need that's specific to my place and my state that can get people excited? Because having something to get people excited is like a magnet. It gives them something to bite into. And that helped us out quite a bit early on. And I can explain a little more about that in a moment. So we've gone through three of the fundamentals: farming, formation, and focus. The next is foundation. This is where kind of the nuts and bolts part of the whole thing. This is where you need to have, you've got to have already figured out what's required in your state to form a corporation, what's the cost of forming a corporation, what would be the obligations to keep an to keep a corporation up to date and in good status. We're very fortunate in North Carolina that our corporations law is pretty liberal, and I don't mean that in a political way. I just mean we're a business-friendly state, so North Carolina doesn't put a lot of burdens on corporations that want to get started. And corporations like ours, which was a nonprofit and is a nonprofit, there's even less demand and even fewer requirements on how to operate a nonprofit and keep it up to date from year to year. So the foundation period, or the foundation segment of these eight fundamentals, really includes the process of incorporating. And then in addition to that, you have to seat a board, and then the third part of that is you need to adopt some bylaws. You need some fundamental rules as to how you're going to operate and what your company, what the expectations will be for members who are on your board, and what kind of officers you plan to have, how you're going to meet, how often you're going to meet, and these sorts of things, which are just fundamental to operate in a corporation regardless of what state you're in. But those are time-consuming tasks. Now, there's a fourth part of that. Incorporating, seating the initial board, developing and adopting bylaws, which is a collaborative thing. Once you've set your board, which is is made up primarily of the people that have indicated their willingness to sit on a board. That's how we did it. I mean, we had an initial group of people who were interested in being a part of what we were doing, but of that group, there were really only five of us who indicated a willingness and a desire to serve on a board. And so the initial board that we sat was made up of those five individuals, and I was the incorporator. And after the incorporation was certified, we had our initial meeting, and we sat the board, which is basically nothing more than taking a vote. We hereby appoint blah, blah, blah to the board. And then after we sat that board, we adopted our bylaws. And then we were legit. We had done everything we needed to do to satisfy the requirements here in North Carolina for creating a corporation. But there was one more step that was important. So I'm going to move a little bit further to the next phase, or the next fundamental, and that's number five, finance. Finance becomes very important early on, and it doesn't necessarily mean you got to have gobs and gobs of money, but it does mean that you need to be mindful of the fact that it costs money to incorporate, and in addition to that, since you want to take advantage of an IRS tax designation, which will establish you either as a 501c4 or, if you prefer, a 501c3, you're going to have money to pay for that application. And that application costs, I believe, I'd have to look back actually, but if I'm not mistaken, it's $400. Incorporation itself in most states is not that expensive. I think in North Carolina it's $75, but having just $75 really isn't enough, because once you've incorporated, you're not really where you need to be yet until you've actually filled out the paperwork. It's called a 1024 if you're filing for C3 status. It's called a 1024 if you're filing for C4 status. If you're filing for C3, it's a 1023. So those are your two forms that you would basically have to deal with, depending on which particular structure you wanted to designate. But either one of them is going to cost you $400 as a filing fee. So how did we deal with that? Well, to put it in simple terms, we relied on ourselves primarily to come up with the money that we needed to get through that incorporation phase and get to that IRS designation. So everybody who was on the board, we put a little bit of what we could afford into the kitty. And a couple of our members, one in particular, was in a unique position of being able to solicit additional support from some friends and some family. And so, and of course, everybody was encouraged to do the same thing with their friends and their family. Sometimes that's easier for some people, and for others it's more difficult. But where it's possible, I don't think it's something to be embarrassed about, particularly if you're trying to do something good and it's going to be helpful to a lot of people. So we were fortunate in being in a position to ask for money from people that could give us money. And we raised close to $1,100 or so dollars in that initial effort. And understand at that point in time, the only thing we were trying to do was cover the cost of incorporating and cover the cost of actually declaring ourselves or getting ourselves approved, is the best way to put it, as a legitimate 501c4. I don't mind explaining the differences between a C4 and C3 if anybody has that question, but I won't go into it now because it could become something of a sidebar and I don't want to confuse everybody. So at this point, we've gone through five phases, which to me are critical and were very useful and important for what North Carolina was able to do. Farming, number one. Number two, formation. Number three, focus. Find a focus, something that's specific to your state that you can get people to rally around. Number four, foundation. Actually go through the process of incorporating, setting a board of directors, and then developing some bylaws. They don't have to be complex, but they need to be something you can understand and everybody on the board can understand. And then lastly, seeking to get designated as either a 501c4 or a 501c3. And then the fifth of that, the fifth phase is finance. You've got to be thinking early on about the need for money. And there's no other effective means to raise money than by asking. So if any of you out there are wondering, how do you get money? I just gave you the answer. You got to ask. You got to show the need. You got to explain the need. And you have to ask. That's just, I wish there was an easier way, but I don't know of one. So let's see. Now we're at number six, and there's only three more of these, six, seven, and eight. Number six, I'm calling number six facilities. Now, that may seem like a strange title or a strange heading, because we really don't have facilities. You know, we're not brick and mortar running operations with, you know, secretaries at the front door and this sort of thing. But there are some facilities you're going to need if you're going to be successful affiliate and you're going to grow quickly. Number one need you're going to have is a bank. You got to have a bank. Now, you're not going to get a bank until you've gone through number four, which is your foundation, because bank's not going to open up an account for you until you're legitimate. And being legitimate means you're incorporated. And then if you can get that IRS designation, that's even more helpful, because the process of filing for IRS designation requires you to get an EIN number, which is an employment number that the federal government assigns. And it's sort of like a Social Security number for a corporation. And it makes you more legitimate in the eyes of a bank. If you've got an EIN number, they feel comfortable doing business with you because they know that the federal government's not just going to hand an EIN number to anybody, although they actually do. But that's neither here nor there. It's very helpful to have a bank because you're going to have somewhere to deposit funds. And I'd say, too, it's important to look for the right bank. You know, in our development, there were several banks that I looked at. Each of them had varying packages with regard to business, and I picked the one that, to me, was very important that it required a low minimum deposit, a low daily average deposit, because if you go below that, then you get penalized with fees and stuff, and I wanted to avoid that. So find a bank that's pro-business and doesn't require you to keep gobs of money in the account before you start getting feed. We were able to find that, and with the money we had left over from that initial capitalization, we were able to open a bank account and put the money in there. And that made us feel, you know, pretty good, actually, at that point. Another facility you really, really need is a website. You don't think of a website as a facility, but it really is, because for modern-day advocacy, a website is your brick and mortar. That's your front door. That's what people can see, and that's what people can be sent to in order to learn more about you. And if that's intimidating for some folks, there are a lot of options out there. There are a lot of companies these days that will help build websites. Even at the national level, we're at a point now where we have the resources to help do that if we're asked to do it. And we want to make sure that if you're in the field and you're thinking seriously about putting an affiliate organization together, that you're not don't be afraid to call us or contact us. And when I'm talking to us, I'm not necessarily talking about North Carolina, although feel free to call us too. But you know, feel free to call National, contact National, and see if there's any way that you can get some help in putting together a website. Also, under facilities, you need a tool for communicating with your members, and you also need a tool for communicating with the press. I would say that probably the most advantageous thing for North Carolina early on was we had the ability to take advantage of a number of high-profile issues that we were able to engage the media about within our state. And again, that's not something we planned because it was more or less an accident. We couldn't have planned it. But we were in a unique position with Packingham and with Doe's v. Cooper and with all the noise that was being made about the premises statute. We had several opportunities to throw press releases out into the broader media community, and quite a few of them did stories. And in a number of cases, North Carolina RSOL got some play time or got some air time. And because we had a website, folks had a place they could go check us out. And I would say, you know, it was obvious that there was money that came into the door and that came into our bank accounts as a consequence of being able to do that media and get those press releases out there and drive some attention to our website. So those are the things right there that I believe are fundamental as facilities go. You need a bank, you need a website, and you need a tool for communicating with your members and the press. Let's see, number seven, and it's already 8:30, so I'm going to rush through the last part of this. Number seven is what I'm calling family. Family is a term I've decided to use for the process of building out, seeking new members, getting more people involved, beginning to decide who has what talent and what skill, and assigning them roles that they can handle, that are fit for their particular interest and their skill level. And that takes some getting, you know, you got to get to kind of get to know people and know what their capacities are. And then in some cases, even challenge them to do more than they might be comfortable doing. that's the much more difficult part of what I think we're all doing in the advocacy world. And I'm certainly not in a position to say we're doing it right. I think we're doing as best as we can, given the resources that we have at our disposal. But we're not growing exponentially in membership, but we have grown, I think, considerably since we began. We started off, we had the 5 board members, and we had 12 active interested people statewide. And now, whenever I communicate with our membership, I'm communicating with roughly 120 people, and I would say 45 to 50 of them are actively interested in what we're doing and have contributed and are supporting our growth and our effort. So that's family. The last one that I have on my list is called franchising. And briefly, this is not something we're able to do just yet. But my idea with franchising is not that I want to create, or I hope that we can create, a lot of North Carolina RSOLs. Instead, given the breadth and the width and sort of the population of the state, there's areas within the state where you have a metropolitan center, and every state's going to be a little bit different. But what I would like to do, and I think in part of our long-term plan, is to create smaller committees of support in those various metropolitan areas. So, and they would all be connected together, but they would be able to meet on their own and participate in doing things at the local level, say in the Charlotte-Mecklenburg area or in the Greensboro Triad area or in down east in the Wilmington area or down south in the Fayetteville area. Again, every state's going to be a little bit different, but this is a vision for how you franchise what North Carolina RSOL is all about and have these committees that are supporting, led each by an individual, but with a smaller group of people around them that are all communicating with us, and we're kind of trying to coordinate how we deal with advocacy and how we proceed, even with litigation, because one of the keys to litigation is knowing where there's a case or knowing where there's a harm that can be addressed or that can be attacked. In closing, let me back up, because another facility you really need is a lawyer. Now, probably not going to think of a lawyer as being a facility, but a lawyer really is a facility, because a lawyer who's willing to get involved and take an interest in your advocacy and take an interest in your organizational growth, it's an incredibly powerful asset to have. And one of the things North Carolina is already in a position to do is when we get calls from wherever in the state where somebody's dealing with something funky, and it can be anything, if it's funky enough, we can get a letter sent. We can get somebody to send a letter to cease and desist or make a couple of phone calls and just let the local law enforcement community know, we're watching what you're doing over there, and we're learning about it, so don't think that it's happening in the dark, because it's not. And that's a very, very important, I think, use of the affiliate if you have the kind of legal relationship that you need in order to do that successfully. You're not going to be as effective without an attorney trying to do that kind of work. Anyway, so in closing, again, I think I've said in closing twice, so if you'll pardon me, in closing once more, let me go back over the 8 fundamentals that I've listed here. The first is farming. The second is formation. The third is to create a focus, come up with something that everybody can rally around. The fourth is foundation, which is your incorporation and your establishment of a legitimate affiliate organization. The fifth is finance. The sixth is facilities. The seventh is family. And what I mean, again, by family is finding the means to in some sense, create that kind of environment if it's possible. Because the stronger you understand who's involved and who's come to the table to offer their talent and their skills, the better you're able to maximize and to engender growth from simply assigning people the tasks that they are capable of handling. And then the final is the franchising, which again is a bit of a vision. It's a bit of a long-term kind of a, at this point, it's not something we're able to do, but it's something we want to do. So that's my presentation. Jennifer, I'll turn it back over to you. It's 8:36. So I went a little bit beyond what I thought I would, but
I think it's perfect, Robin. I will turn it over now. If any folks have questions that you'd like to ask of Robin, you can dial *6 to get into the Q&A, or there is a place on the toolbar where you, if you're online on a computer, you can click on the toolbar, the Q&A, and get in line to ask a question if you'd like. All right, we have our first one here.
Well, I guess I'm first. This is Michael from Indiana. How are you doing?
Hey, Michael.
Hey, I was wondering if you guys had a phone system that you were using in North Carolina there in order to field calls from anybody that you had approached about in your farming efforts, and how that worked or what service you were finding effective.
Well, what I did here was I created a Google Voice number that I assigned to the website, and it's also in any of the materials that we send out, particularly press releases and stuff. It's included there. That's worked pretty well if you understand how Google Voice operates. I only recently found out, really within the last 4 months, there's an app that you can add to your cell phone which will allow you to integrate the Google Voice with your own cell phone. So now when anybody ever calls the number that's associated with with North Carolina RSOL, like for instance if they go to the website and they want to get a hold of somebody, then whenever they call that number, it will come to my cell phone and I'll see that the number is coming, you know, from that Google Voice number. And so I know that that's a number for North Carolina RSOL. And so I'm able to put my North Carolina RSOL hat on and answer the phone like I'm, you know, with North Carolina RSOL. The nice thing about that app is if I call somebody, if I return a call, before an outgoing call goes from my phone, it gives me the option to choose whether I want to use my actual cell phone number to make that call or if I want to use the Google Voice number. And, of course, most people, at least I'm not as comfortable using my own cell phone number to return, say, a media inquiry or a call from somewhere in the state from somebody who came through the website, because I don't know who I'm calling, and I don't know if their interests or their desires are honest or in some way, you know, trying to, you know, you just never know what you're dealing with. So I really sure. like the ability to be able to call out using that number. And I'm happy to explain how to set that up. And it's free. It doesn't cost a penny. It's absolutely free.
I actually have the Google Voice number, but I wasn't aware of the app. Where is that available from?
Let me look it up right here. You can down. What do you use? Do you have Android or do you have iPhone?
It's an Android.
Okay, so let's see.
I mean, is it just from your regular app provider, or is it something through Google specifically?
It's through Play Store. It's a Google app. If you get on there and you type in Google Voice, I'm not finding it on my phone. I know it's there because it works, but anyway, I can't find it right offhand. But if you go to Play Store and just put Google Voice in there, that app should pop up for you.
Yeah, and it's I see it on the iPhone too. So, and I just search for Google Voice app.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did you guys do a mailing then originally, you said, or not?
We've done a couple of mailings. I didn't get into talking much about mail. I mean, mail is sort of my thing. But as at National, as we've come to understand, mailing can be problematic when you don't know anything about the people you're mailing. Even if they're registered citizens, you still we've found the response has been less than stellar. But we did do a mailing to about 500 registered people in the Wake and Durham County areas. This was back in, I'd say, September or October of 16. It paid for itself, and we picked up about 10 additional members. But that's all. You know, it didn't make any money. So if you're looking at mail as a means to raise money, it's probably not your best way to go. But if you're looking at mail as a way to augment and supplement your membership, it will work as long as you've got the funds to sustain a consistent mail campaign. And we're not there yet. We've got the funds, but we've also committed to several thousand dollars worth of our funds to our case. So the case, the importance of the case, sort of at this point in time, it's more important for us to keep our money there than to put a lot of our money into building out the membership.
Yeah. Rob and I, for those who are on who have access to the chat, Andy shared a link to that app, at least for Google Play. So yeah. Anybody wants to check the chat, just wanted to tuck that in there.
Yeah, it's a great, great app. I love that.
Yeah, that's nice. I was going to put a little plug in for if you're willing to spend a fairly small amount each month. It's not a free app, but Grasshopper is what National RSOL uses. That allows you to have, mailboxes, different voicemail boxes, and a lot more bells and whistles for the, for the price.
Absolutely.
So, yep. Mm-hmm. Are there any other
questions?
All right,
well, thanks.
Thank you,
Michael.
Uh-huh, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Yep, and David just popped up with the iTunes link again on the chat board. Jennifer, do we have any other questions in the queue?
I don't see anybody. No one in the queue right yet.
No other people. If you are on the, I had a little trouble. Like, you can't just press *6 when you're on the dashboard. I found I had to go up under the little settings gear and press show dial pad, and then dial *6 from that, just in case you're frustrated and have a question, but you're not seeing how to dial it.
We have one in the queue now.
There you go.
Hello, I have a question. How is everybody?
Hey, how are you?
Good. As far as joining other groups that you may be interested in, say either if you're a member of a labor union or perhaps a motorcycle safety group or something like that, be able to plead your case with them. They may take a position on legislation in their particular state as it comes to these type of issues. If anyone has either tried that, I'm at a position where I might be able to, but I'm not sure if I really am ready to or not bring up these type of issues with some of these other advocacy groups. I was just wondering if you ever thought about co-mingling with other groups, or if people have their own interests that they're involved in another group for another reason, and that advocate, maybe there might be some cross-advocation. I'm wondering if you have an opinion on that. Say, like a motorcycle group or a labor union group, something like that.
Those are pretty far out of the left field. I know there's been a lot of cross-pollination with criminal justice advocacy groups. Robin, have you, at least because...
No, I mean, I hear what he's saying. I think it's a great idea. I myself would feel extraordinarily uncomfortable approaching a motorcycle group with my particular area of advocacy unless I knew, beforehand that there was likely to be somebody there who could vouch for what we're up to and be able to kind of take it from there. But hey, look, that's part of the family. To me, that's part of the family thing. I mean, reaching out and building relationships. Here in North Carolina, the only relationships we've been able to build, and we're still working on it, but it's come a long way, is with the ACLU. We just recently, in the last actually several weeks, have worked very closely with the ACLU on a piece of litigation that was pending in the House. It ultimately was pulled off the calendar, but just having the opportunity to speak with them and to exchange emails with them and to meet them in person, that's, I think, extraordinarily important for the future. That's just one narrow, you know, certainly what you're talking about is much broader, and we're just not well enough organized ourselves to engage on that level.
Well, you could engage your own members to find out what else are they involved in.
That's true. Right. I hadn't thought of that.
Like I myself, if you're a member of a labor union, I am a member of a labor union, and which, whether I like it or not, people might be aware of your registration requirements, and whether they like it or not, have to come to terms with them over a period of 5, 10, 20, 30 years, however long that you've been in this organization.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great idea. I think that's a great idea. I mean, that's something I hadn't thought of. Certainly, if you've got people who are already in the door who also are members of other organizations where folks there might listen to what they have to say and respect what their interests are, then, yeah, I think that's something we should encourage.
Now, something unrelated I was going to ask about your priority in terms of what you decide to fight. Are you, like, here in Michigan, you know, and in other states too, there's other types of registries that are proposed, and whether or not to fight those registries just on the basis of there being another type of registry, or could the fact that more registries mean more potential members, a larger groundswell of a backlash towards registries in general. I was wondering if you've taken a position in your state when it comes to other types of registries that might be proposed.
We have not. Thankfully, in North Carolina, there really right now isn't a lot going on with other types of registries. I think a broader sort of anti-registry position is one that's going to grow more important in, as time goes by, because there does seem to be a fair indication that that's the direction that this registration stuff is going to go. As time goes by, I think we would probably, if in fact in North Carolina we found that was something being proposed, I think we would want to be opposed to that. We'd want to be opposed to the expanding of additional registries.
We certainly are at national. Our general take is that there's no such thing as a useful one, at least in terms of public shaming. It's, you know, it's not effective. And we would definitely encourage any state where, animal abuser or child abuser registries, et cetera, are being proposed, that those be spoken against.
Yeah. I think, though, for forming an organization, which is primarily what this advocacy segment is about, I'm not a big fan of too broad a stroke.
Right.
I think it's very important to have a specific focus on what you're trying to do, because that's going to make it a lot easier to identify the people who are likely to get involved at that early stage, which is so critical. If you can find a core group of people who really focused on a single or maybe a couple of really serious issues that are related and obviously germane to this constituency, that's going to be more beneficial to you. Our attorney, Paul Dubling, he likes to talk a lot about low-hanging fruit. And if you just look at the now Michigan's a mess right now. I mean, I don't even want to compare anything to Michigan because what happened there sort of shocked the whole world, and nobody knows exactly how it's going to shape out at this point in time. So the strategy in other areas like North Carolina and other states with really restrictive types of impositions or enhancements, low-hanging fruit is key because you want to be able to go to court and try to take something off of the tree that's winnable. And that's what was able to, that was what Paul was able to do in the Doe v. Cooper case. They were able to take something off the tree that was winnable. They won it, and they got it sustained. And that's good because now we've laid a better ground for future challenges.
Okay. Another question I have is about targeting specific Senate or representative districts within your state as far as where things really happen, like the a judiciary committee, their chairman's district, and go after maybe members in their area or find out when he's having a public meeting with people in his district and get and push for members in a particular district that might have the most sway over these type of issues. Do you understand what I mean by that?
I understand it. I would not advocate that.
Okay.
And here's the reason. As a C4, which is what North Carolina RSOL is, and also NARSL. NARSL is also a C4. You're very restricted in what you can do in engaging politically. And we don't want to take that kind of gamble. I mean, you might be able to get away with it. And certainly there's no shortage of people out there who we represent who would like to see us become more active in that area. But there's a big difference between legislative lobbying, where you're simply trying to stop a bad bill, or you're trying to get a good bill passed, which is what we tried to do here. There's a big difference between that and being seen as if you're trying to influence the outcome of elections. If you get into that, the IRS is going to slap you on the head, and they might very well put you out of business. Or you're going to be tied up in court fighting to defend your status as a tax-exempt organization, which is probably going to bleed you to death and make it very unlikely that members are going to want to support you because they don't want their money going into a litigation to defend your existence. Yeah.
I would say that a slight turn on that, though, is that it is a good idea to talk to chair and other members of your judiciary committee and other committees that typically hear the bills in your state, that deal with our issue. But the focus should be on educating those members when it's not during legislative session. Educating the members about concerns about the law, or educating them, finding out from them where they stand, so you end up with a relationship with those lawmakers. And so that
sure.
would be your goal. So that is a very useful thing to do in that context. I think where Robin's concern is that if you're showing up at a fundraising event or where they're out there doing stump speeches and stuff like that, you could end up looking like you're trying to influence an election, and that's where you can get into trouble as an organization.
Well, let me use an example. Like my local legislator just happened to propose an amendment to make it more difficult for divorced registrants to get parenting time with their children. And he had a local meeting or a coffee meeting, whatever they called it, at a local library where he just kind of met with people and just kind of put it out there, hey, I'm going to be here at this time of day. If you want to come and ask me a question or talk, this is where I'll be. And I went, showed up over there. I hammered him on it pretty good in front of other constituents. And he was thrown off considerably. Now, he's not the Republican Party controls much of what goes on in the state from a legislative standpoint. So if you live in a district that's controlled by a Democrat, what they say really doesn't matter much. But politically aside, that bill never got proposed in the next session. So I think we could all agree the easiest course of action is to prevent a law from being passed to begin with.
Definitely better to prevent where possible. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I don't think I don't think what you just described could be construed as supporting any particular partisan outcome in a campaign.
No.
So I think that's fine.
No, I'm not.
If you're just there to lobby, if you're just there to express your disapproval of his policies or his bills or whatever, that's fine. That's okay. You've got a right to do that. Just don't give him, don't give his opponent a $20 check the next week.
We do have another person in the queue.
Okay. So thank you. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, who's our next person?
Hi, this is Bill from Michigan, and just going to ask about maybe a contact person in Michigan that I could get with to help out. And my other question is, what does it mean when the U.S. Supreme Court asks the Solicitor General to file a brief on the Michigan case? Those are my two questions.
Well, the answer to your first question, Brenda, is I've got Reform SO Law _ MI at Yahoo as our contact in Michigan.
Let me pull that up real quick while you're, if you have
Michigan Citizens for Justice.
Yeah,
as far as
Citizens United for CU.
Citizens United.
Yeah.
That's not what we have. That's not what we have on the web. Well, we've got two. We've got two listed on the website.
Yeah, we have two. There's two different groups. So let me pull it up real quick.
Concerning the second.
Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, concerning the second question, what does it mean when the court asks the solicitor general for an opinion?
Yeah, brief.
Yeah, okay. Basically, it really doesn't mean any more than that, actually. I think it's fair to say it means that the court has an interest in the case. I think that seems to be clear. It doesn't mean that the court has a plan for the case, but it does mean that the court seems to believe that the federal government has a stake in the outcome of the case, and so therefore, as a matter of courtesy and respect, and also as a matter of inquisition or inquiry is a better term. Finding out what the Solicitor General would actually be arguing will be helpful for the court to know how to dispose of the case should they decide to take it. So in some sense, you might think it's going to provide the court with a roadmap or at least a glimpse at the kind of arguments that it would expect the government of the United States to make if it accepts the petition. That's at this point. That's about all it means. It's unfortunate in this. If you're talking, of course, about the Sixth Circuit case, I imagine you are. It's unfortunate only in the respect that it means we're all going to probably have to wait for at least another year before we know what the final, outcome of that case is going to be.
Sure, takes a long time.
Yeah.
All this. Okay.
Well, it was only. And Brenda, okay. did you find a contact?
I'm hopping
contact?
Over because we were looking for the website, and I do believe it's online, and I'm just real quickly trying to hop over to that and verify. I tried a different approach first, and that did not work. Michigan, micitizensforjustice.com, and the other one is www.coalitionur.org.
Yeah.
Can you say that second one again?
Yeah. This is www.coalitionur. That's .org. That's Coalition for a Usable Registry.
Yeah.
It is on our website under About Us, and you can find our affiliates there. You can see both of those there.
Okay.
There's another name that I'll give you. He goes by Tim P. I don't know the last name.
Tim,
T-I-M. P.
Oh, Tim, okay.
He is with the ACLU of Michigan. He's a SOAR, calls himself a SOAR specialist. I'm not sure what that means.
Sex offender registry.
There you go.
He is connected with PURE, with CUR.
Yeah. Yeah, his email address, if you got something right with, his email address is US... 567 mm-hmm. at Hotmail.
Yeah.
At Hotmail. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. You were on the call tonight, and we mentioned him as a possible contact person for whatever interest you have in speaking with him about Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Okay.
Nobody else in the queue.
That's
excellent.
All right. We're coming right up on 9 o'clock, so that's convenient timing for sure.
Yeah. All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity to chew my cud this evening. I hope that it was informative and helpful.
Well, I certainly have enjoyed the session. You said you had a document at the beginning, and some people thought you were going to be showing it on a PowerPoint. Do you have your notes somewhere that
I got them.
Post?
Yeah. I'll just send them. I'll send them to you. It's more of an outline, really.
Sure, it's an outline. Yep. That's fine. For those who would like to, who didn't take studious notes, they want to remember those 8 points. Maybe we can post that on the meeting wall and possibly also tuck it up there on under the recording on our website, which we'll try to get up as soon as possible.
Okay.
Okay, Jennifer, any last words on your part?
No, I don't think so. Just to thank you to Robin for sharing with us. We really appreciate it.
No problem.
Indeed.
Thank you.
All right,
thanks,
thank
everybody.
You.
All right, okay. Y'all have a good night.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now.